Hello there, and welcome to episode number 130 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get chipped at 8. So, here we are, back again in a very familiar position with the Toronto Blue Jays getting swept out of the wild card round for the third time in the last 4 seasons, dating back to that weird 2020 playoffs where the Blue Jays were playing with house money, essentially, in that season, in that year, where they really shouldn't have been a playoff team, but because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the playoffs were expanded, the Blue Jays got in, but they didn't really put up much of a fight against the Tampa Bay Rays. And obviously we already know what happened in last year's playoffs, because it has been scarred into almost every Blue Jays fan's minds. And so this year, even though they lost in certainly a different way than they did in 2022, it still was not without controversy, particularly in the elimination game, where despite a gem of a performance from Jose Berríos through the first 3 innings, he was pulled after issuing a leadoff walk in the 4th inning to Royce Lewis, who everyone knows was having a really good postseason so far. He had a 2 home run performance in game 1 to lift the Twins to a game 1 victory over the Jays. So walking him for the walking Lewis a second time through the lineup certainly to me didn't seem like it was cause for concern. And despite that, John Schneider came out of the Blue Jays dugout, signaled to the pen for Yusei Kikuchi, wanting the lefty-lefty matchup that was coming up. And luck. The matchup results are what they are. Right, Jose Berríos on the season allowed a 261, 323, 450 slash line with 16 home runs surrendered against left-handed batters during the regular season. They hit him extremely well the year before as well. Yusei Kikuchi, he held left-handed batters to a 214, 270, 389 slash line with only 6 of his 27 home runs surrendered in those matchups. Tiny-ish sample size, just 36 and a third innings, but clearly that was enough for the Blue Jays to say, hey, and this game plan was this game plan was created long before the start of game 2, but for whatever reason, the Blue Jays were so hell-bent on getting a left-handed pitcher in to face the Twins lineup a second time through, rather than allowing Jose Berríos to continue dueling on the mound against Sonny Gray. And look, in a nutshell, it was the wrong decision. That's pretty simple, right? Yusei Kikuchi comes in, gives up a couple of runs. And that was the difference. But I think when you're able to take a step back and you look at it from the angle of, okay, the Blue Jays could not trust their offense in an elimination game, which is an entirely separate issue. However, they were basing their structure and their strategy in game two off of the fact that they probably knew they were only likely to get one, maybe two runs in game two. And as it turns out, that inkling was pretty accurate because they were blanked. So, you know, we can criticize the decision to take Jose Berríos all we want. Like, that's always going to be there. But at the same time, there's still the fact that the Blue Jays didn't score a single run in that game. Nada. Nothing. They came close a few times. Matt Chapman came within inches of putting the Jays back into the game. But it just didn't break their way. And unfortunately, that was a recurring theme for Matt Chapman in both games against the Twins, where in game one, he came within maybe a foot of having at least a double with runners on base. And had the Blue Jays played in any of the 13 ballparks that fly ball would have been out of, could have been a completely different story for the Blue Jays in this series. So from a batted ball fortune, a number of things didn't go their way in this series. And that's just baseball, right? That those kind of weird things happen in a best of three series. But if we look back on this series, outside of that insane decision to pull Jose Berríos, ultimately, the Blue Jays' downfall was not only their lack, their inability to deliver with runners in scoring position, which, again, was just a recurring theme. It was basically the underlying theme of this offense, that they just, despite being a really good contact, on-base-oriented team, one that doesn't chase a lot or generate a lot of swing and miss, creates a lot of contact, despite all that, they could not utilize and capitalize that approach, that mindset, when it mattered most. And because this offense, for whatever reason, did not produce the type of power many thought they would, that hurt them even more, and that burned them specifically in the playoffs, because it's just so incredibly difficult to string hits together and keep the chain rolling in the playoffs when you're facing some of the best pitchers in baseball. It's just so tough to do that. That's why home runs have become so essential in the postseason. You look at it from a broad perspective in the wildcard round. Teams who out-homered their opponents were 5-0 in the wildcard round. That includes the Twins in game one of this series. The Twins only had two extra base hits all series, but they both came off the bat of Royce Lewis in game one. The Blue Jays, they had one extra base hit, and it was Vladdy's leadoff double in the eighth inning of game one. And what happened after that? That's as far as Vladdy went. He didn't move off of second base because the Blue Jays stranded him there. The next three batters, Bichette, Biggio, Kirk, they were all retired in order. That can't happen. That cannot happen in the postseason. You cannot go two games and only register one extra base hit. Like, the Blue Jays out-hit the Twins in the two games. They had 16 hits to Minnesota's 12. But the difference was only one of those 16 hits were not a single. The Blue Jays had 15 singles in the two games. But again, they were spread out. There was only one instance where the Blue Jays were able to string three singles together. But they didn't score. They didn't score off of those. That's just, again, that's a case in point, a prime example of how meaningful it is to have power in your lineup when it comes to the postseason. You need to be able to have some sort of reliable power stroke, whether it's at the top of your lineup, in the middle, or at the bottom. It needs to be in there so that when you're able to get some runners on base, you can cash them in with one swing. You look at the Philadelphia Phillies and what they were able to do against the Miami Marlins. Bryson Stott delivering a critical grand slam. You look at the Brewers and Diamondbacks series, they were trading home runs with each other. Gabby Moreno included in that discussion. So, you know, I'll dig into this later in the episode and obviously throughout the offseason because we have so much time to break down how the Blue Jays need to improve here so that when they're in this position, hopefully next year and back in the playoffs, they don't have to try and string together hits and hope that they can deliver with runners in scoring position. Because heading into this series, the whole discussion around this team's identity was that, okay, they're going to try and win with pitching and defense and hope they can scrap together a few runs. Because ultimately, like, that's what the Blue Jays' identity was throughout all of 2023. And so then for the vibes to just shift and it to become where it's like, okay, well, stringing hits together isn't going to work against some of the best pitchers in baseball. So we're going to just try and sell out for home runs. And it's like, That ain't gonna work either. When you're trying to sell out for home runs and you haven't been an elite slugging team all year. Like, it can't change on a dime like that, especially in the playoffs where you're facing the best of the best. So that communication, that messaging is all out of whack. And, you know, that kind of brings me to my next point about there needs to be some sort of accountability, top to bottom. Not just, okay, let's fire John Schneider. Because, like, truthfully, sure, was Schneider the one walking out to the mound and taking the ball from Jose Berríos? Sure, he was. That's his job. But it wasn't just Schneider in the discussion about, okay, how should we approach the Twins lineup in an elimination game? Could Schneider have just essentially given the middle finger to the organization and say, look, I'm going to trust my eyes and I'm going to leave Jose Berríos in there because he is he's been as good as he has been all year. And he knows this team as well as anyone on the Blue Jays staff. Yeah, he could have. He could have absolutely left Berríos in. But then it's, you know, then it's Schneider's ass on the line, right? And sure, that's part of the reason why managers make the big bucks. But who's to say that move doesn't blow up in the Blue Jays' face too? What if the Blue Jays had left Jose Berríos in there and he ends up giving up at least one run? What if Berríos gives up one run and Schneider basically told the front office off? Then not only did the Blue Jays still lose that game, Schneider then has to go back and face the music. And I'm not saying that that should be an excuse, because, you know, frankly, like, that would be a soft one. But at the same time, too, I just don't think even bringing in a new manager would solve anything either. Like, sure, would there be less instant or fewer instances where Schneider by default overtrusts his quote-unquote guys, like, say, a few weeks ago where Jordan Romano was dealing with a cracked fingernail, and despite having Josh Lowe coming up, the Blue Jays stick with Romano rather than going to Tim Mesa, and they end up losing that game. You know, stuff like that, yeah. With a more experienced manager, sure, you're probably able to avoid some of that stuff, but as a whole, if you replace Schneider with a more experienced one, that doesn't necessarily clean up enough of the flaws inside the Blue Jays organization, behind the scenes, where I just think you need to have, and it's like what Bo Bichette said, where there needs to be a whole organizational reflection, not just with, you know, Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro, John Schneider. You need to dig deep beyond that and say, okay, how can we get better? And, you know, considering how much this offense underperformed, considering how unclear the messaging was between, you know, the identity of this offense and having a consistent approach at the plate, I just think the hitting department is where you probably should start that reflection, and not just look at Guillermo Martinez and Dave Hudgens, but go even deeper and look at the entire analytics department and say, okay, how can we get better? Do we need more? Do we need less? Do we need more skilled, resourceful people in those positions? That's the kind of stuff that I want to see transpire throughout the organization. It's not just on the hitting side, but it's also in the player development, in the player evaluation departments as well, and also in the front office too, because they're on the hook for some of these failures as well, because their projections, even though there were many of them, I'm sure not a lot of them had the offense underperforming as much as it did, right? Because if you look at some of the third-party projections, like, say, Zips projections from Fangraphs, they had this Blue Jays offense rostering 330 home run hitters this season. Vladdy, Chapman, Varsho. They also had two of those guys reaching at least a 500 slugging percentage in Varsho and Guerrero. And neither of those two things happened. The Blue Jays barely finished the regular season with 420 home run hitters in Vlad, Springer, Bichette, and Varsho. But, like, that's a pretty easy standard to hit. I mean, if you just go off of the teams who made the playoffs this year, outside of the Twins, Brewers, and Marlins, everyone else had at least 420 home run hitters this season. So that's not much of a benchmark for the Blue Jays. Like, they should have, without question, at least had one guy hit 30 home runs. I mean, Michael A. Taylor for the Minnesota Twins had 21 home runs, I believe. Like, you know, home runs aren't the be-all, end-all things, but when you get to the postseason, they mean a whole hell of a lot. But you just look at other statistics throughout this lineup, like slugging percentage, for example. I'm going to put this out to the whole audience here. Just in this brief little moment here, Who do you think led the team, led the Blue Jays offense in slugging percentage this season? I'll give you a few seconds to think about it. It's, you know, if you've been following this team for, you know, the large part of this season, it should come fairly easy to you. But as we get down farther down the list, the names on there may surprise you a little bit. So, number one on the list, Brandon Belt with a 490 slugging percentage. 490. Pretty impressive for a guy in his mid-30s. Not to mention he also had a 138 WRC+, which also led the Blue Jays. Bo Bichette, unsurprisingly, number two in slugging percentage behind Brandon Belt at 475. Danny Jansen just one percentage point below Bichette with a 474 slug. Then we get down to Vlad with a 444, Matt Chapman with a 424, but that could have been even lower considering that he was basically dismal at the plate from May onward. Kevin Kiermaier finishing ahead of George Springer in slugging percentage, and by a fairly significant margin. Kiermaier had a 419 slug, George Springer with a 405. And then if you want to look at something like isolated power, which takes into account slugging percentage and batting average, and Danny Jansen led the Blue Jays with a 246 ISO. Brandon Belt right behind him with a 236. Matt Chapman, 185. Vlad, 179. We want to go all the way down to, say, Springer. He had a 147 ISO. And for a reference, like, you want to be somewhere in the 180 to 200 range, if not higher. And heading into this season, Fangraphs had Dalton Varsho leading the Blue Jays with a 248 ISO. Vlad at number two with a 230. Springer at 229 ISO. Like, sure, projections you have to take with a grain of salt, obviously, but this team, just for whatever reason, underperformed by such a significant threshold, particularly in the power department. Because again, like I said, like, they were an above average offense at quality controlling the strike zone and making a lot of contact and putting balls in play, generating walks. Like, they were all effective in those categories. It just, when it came to slugging and generating power, that's where they missed their mark. So, as we look ahead here to what should slash may transpire in the off season, I think obviously the Blue Jays have to deal with their pending free agents, and it's definitely a much larger list than they had last year. Because coming off of the 2022 postseason failure, the biggest free agent that the Blue Jays had was Ross Stripling. That was it. They were very fortunate in that regard. But now you're looking at a scenario where the Blue Jays have some significant free agents that could walk out the door for nothing. And the top of that list is Matt Chapman, Brandon Belt, who may even retire. And speaking of retirement, the Blue Jays already have a hole to fill on their coaching staff, with Luis Rivera announcing his retirement essentially like right after the Blue Jays were eliminated from the playoffs. So that's, they're going to have to find a new third base coach already. So you got Chapman, Kiermaier, Belt. Jordan Hicks is a free agent, and he's somebody who, considering what the Blue Jays gave up at the trade deadline to get him, that's a piece you really want to be able to bring back. Hyunjin Ryu, also a free agent, and to note, Matt Chapman is eligible to receive a qualifying offer. Hyunjin Ryu is not, because he has already received one. He got one from the Dodgers before he signed with the Blue Jays prior to the 2020 season. And as well, on top of those guys, you're likely to see Whit Merrifield enter free agency as well, considering that he has an $18 million mutual option that, you know, I really like the type of season that Merrifield had, but I don't think he'll be back with this team, at least not on that $18 million option. But there's always the possibility that the Blue Jays could bring Merrifield back on some sort of short-term deal. But I think, judging by Merrifield's comments post-game following the Blue Jays elimination, I think he kind of sees the writing on the wall that he won't be back. Because you have to remember, like, Merrifield didn't hit well down the stretch over the final few weeks, final month. And he lost a lot of playing time because of those struggles, because Kevin Biggio had been so solid for the Blue Jays down the stretch and even before that as well. And you look at it too, like, Biggio started at second base in both games of the wildcard series. So at 34, soon to be 35, I just don't think Whit Merrifield's going to be back with the Blue Jays next season. I think he'll probably be more inclined to look at some sort of opportunity where he can play every day consistently and not have to worry about losing any sort of everyday reps like he did in Toronto and like he would if he were to return in Toronto. And I think, too, the Blue Jays can kind of fill his spot internally with what they already have. You look at the fact that, again, like, if Kevin Biggio is able to continue this process, these results that he had from really May through the remainder of the season into next, he should absolutely be in consideration of regular reps, not just at second base, but all around the field as well. Davis Schneider, I'd like to see what he can do with an extended run. You also have to keep in mind that the Blue Jays have others down in Buffalo that they could call upon as well. I mean, Aurelvis Martinez probably isn't too far away from making his major league debut. I would think that would come at some point next season, depending on how he starts the year at Triple A Buffalo. Addison Barger is another guy who would have versatility and a left-handed bat who could provide some power to the Blue Jays lineup. So he could be a potential option in spring training to compete for a spot. And I think, too, if the Blue Jays, say, were to go out and target a veteran middle infielder, somebody who could play both second base and shortstop, maybe that gives them the freedom to non-tender somebody like Santiago Espinal, who had a miserable season with the Blue Jays. And he's another guy that didn't play a whole hell of a lot over the last, you know, month or so of the season, and he's going to get more expensive because he'll be a second year arbitration player. And Espinal costs the Blue Jays $2.1 million this year. He may get up close to $3 million in 2024. So I think, you know, like, the Blue Jays aren't trying to pinch as many dollars as they can, but, you know, at the same time, every $1 million counts. And with what their infield group could look like next season, I just don't know where there'd be a spot for Espinal other than being that backup shortstop in case something happens to Bo Bichette. But you know, we saw Kevin Biggio make his debut at shortstop earlier this season. He's been chomping at the bit, apparently, for a number of years, like, really hoping that the Blue Jays would try him out at that position, because that's really the only spot that he hasn't played. He's played first base, second base, third base. He can play both corner outfield spots. I wouldn't be shocked if he could handle center field in some sort of pinch. So yeah, like, why not have Kevin Biggio at least be a part of the conversation to fill in when needed at shortstop? But again, if they're able to find some sort of alternative option, I mean, hey, Tim Anderson could be a guy even that the Blue Jays target in the offseason, because he's recently said that he'd be open to moving to second base. And even though Tim Anderson didn't have a good year this season, I mean, I would think he'd be fairly inexpensive to acquire. And though that would probably take away some opportunities from Biggio and Schneider, I mean, that would give you another option to play at shortstop. Prime Tim Anderson would undoubtedly improve this offense a lot more than, say, a Whit Merrifield would, at least in the categories that the Blue Jays need, like power. So, I mean, we could see where things go in that department. But in terms of which free agents to bring back, obviously, like, I would love to bring Matt Chapman back. He clearly enjoyed his time with the Blue Jays. He's one of the best defensive players in baseball. He's arguably probably the second best defensive third baseman in the game behind Nolan Arenado. On that alone, I would love to have his defense back at the hot corner, just especially because the free agent market, it's so thin for position players this winter. And because of that, like, Matt Chapman will easily be the top third baseman available on the open market if he gets there. It probably won't help his case that he'll likely be attached to a qualifying offer. But at 30 years old, like, would he be open to taking some sort of short-term deal? Because I don't think the Blue Jays would be totally inclined to offering Chapman like a 4 or 5 year deal or anything longer than that, especially because, like, they have Barger, Martinez in the pipeline, so, and even David Schneider can play third base, and they have other guys coming as well, so I don't think they need to go longer than, say, like 3 years with Matt Chapman. Maybe go 3 years plus a mutual option or club option or player option, just to help sweeten the deal a little bit. But that's a guy, even though, despite his offensive struggles, he's certainly better than what he showed this season. Like, you just look at his track record, and to me, like, he's better than a player that posted a 110 WRC plus with a 424 slugging percentage and a 328 WOBA. Like, we've seen better days from Matt Chapman than that type of production. I mean, like, he finished with 17 home runs. Danny Jansen had that in 301 plate appearances. There's more there with Matt Chapman. I don't completely understand why he struggled so much. I would have to dig deep into the metrics and try and diagnose what really transpired with him, other than just kind of one of the go-to things amongst Blue Jays fans, where it's like they didn't pull enough. And to me, it's just like it's a bit more simpler to me, or a bit it's less simple than that. It's a bit more complicated than just, say, sell out to pull fly balls. I don't know. That approach doesn't really sit right with me. I mean, obviously they needed to be able to do more than they did in that department, but I think the approach needs to be a little bit more complex, or is a little more complex than just saying they need to pull more fly balls. But I think Chapman could, without question, be capable of a bounce back offensive campaign next year. And beyond Chapman, I mean, obviously, with the year Brandon Belt had, it would be outstanding to bring him back for another season. I mean, he did everything you could have asked for him offensively. You know, maybe hits for a little bit more power, but at this stage of his career, that would have probably been a bonus. You know, he was without a doubt one of the best hitters on this team, along with Bo Bichette. So I think it comes down to whether or not Belt wants to play another year, wants to come back. You know, some sort of pipe dream scenario for many Blue Jays fans, I'm sure, is pouncing on the opportunity to bring Joey Votto to Canada, because he's recently come out and said that he wants to play another year. He would prefer to do that with the Cincinnati Reds, but he would also consider playing elsewhere too if teams are interested in him. So that would, you know, it would fill the same sort of role that Belt did, where you're a primary DH versus right-handed pitching. Belt had a way better year than Joey Votto, statistically speaking, but that could be an option. It would certainly be one that the fan base would absolutely adore. But we'll see where things go with Belt. Again, I've said where I stand on Whit Merrifield. Hyunjin Ryu probably goes elsewhere. I don't really see a fit with him with the Blue Jays beyond this season, because I just think they need a little bit more versatility at the back end of the rotation. Because if going into next year, we'll see where things are at with Alek Manoah. I mean, perfect scenario is he comes into spring training hungry and he wins that fifth job coming out of spring training. But there are so many unknowns with him still, and I'm sure there are going to be plenty of storylines to come out of the offseason about that. So that's kind of a wait and see. But along with Manoah, Bowden Francis should absolutely be in line to competing for that final rotation spot. But there needs to be another addition to that group. Obviously, you would love if Ricky Tiedemann just absolutely blew the doors off everybody in spring training and won that job, but I think that's a little unrealistic considering that he's made just one start at AAA in his career. And I think too, the Blue Jays need to go out and target a back end of the rotation pitcher, somebody who, if he doesn't win that fifth spot, he could go down to the bullpen and be that bulk slash multi-inning reliever that essentially Bowden Francis served as for most of this season. And that's a position throughout most of the first half of this season that the Blue Jays were largely without. And because of that, that led to Alek Manoah having to continue to struggle but still make starts for the Blue Jays at the big league level because they had no better alternatives. And I think they need to do a better job of protecting themselves, especially because another thing too is that the Blue Jays were so incredibly lucky in terms of a health perspective this year. I mean, to only need seven starters, really six, because one of those seven was Trevor Richards and he was just working as not an opener, but that's basically what he was used as, just like a three or four inning opener. And I just, you can't bank on that type of health repeating in 2024, not just with the starting rotation, but also the position player group as well. Like, the Blue Jays absolutely squandered an opportunity to win more games when they were as healthy as they were. And that falls into the fact that this season was another missed opportunity. But again, that brings me back to the fact that they need to further solidify their starting pitching depth beyond that top four of Gausman, Berríos, Bassett, and Kikuchi. So I think there will probably be no shortage of potential options in that regard, but obviously those types of depth moves happen later on in the offseason, so that likely won't be a primary focus of the front office out of the gate here, and understandably so. And then Jordan Hicks, right? Like, I coined the phrase, or I'd like to think I coined the phrase of Jordan squared at the back end of the Blue Jays bullpen with Romano and Hicks. And man, that was just such a lethal combination, along with Eric Swanson and Tim Mesa and Jimmy Garcia and Chad Green. I know Trevor Richards struggled down the stretch basically ever since he came off the injured list, but he was so good for the Blue Jays too when they needed him. Again, filling in for Alek Manoah in those turns through the rotation. And Yenesis Cabrera too, can't forget about him, what he did for the Blue Jays this season, coming over in basically a nothing trade that didn't garner anywhere near as much attention as it probably deserved, considering the type of performance that Cabrera had. And you look at it and it's like, okay, like, even though relievers are extremely volatile, if the Blue Jays use Cabrera in that same type of role where he's coming in earlier in games against lefties, that could continue to prove to be a steal heading into next season and beyond, because Cabrera still has two more years of team control, and he's not even going to cost the Blue Jays all that much despite being a second arbitration player, because he only earned $950,000 last year. He's probably going to get a significant raise from that, but you know, maybe he's at 1.5. I don't think he'd be around 2 million, but maybe. But the bullpen, for the most part, is fairly intact. I mean, Chad Green seems like an absolute lock to have that 3-year club option picked up. Like, maybe they don't do that, considering Chad Green is still just, you know, less than a year coming off Tommy John surgery. Actually, maybe just a little bit more past the year, but still, I mean, because his contract is so complex, I would be shocked if Green isn't back with the Blue Jays in some sort of capacity next year, whether that's on his 3-year club option or 2-year player option. I just don't see him going anywhere, especially with how well he pitched after the, you know, the grace period that he had when he first came back. He was fantastic for the Blue Jays down the stretch. So, you know, outside of Jordan Hicks, their bullpen's fairly solid when it comes to players coming back. The Blue Jays will probably look to save a little bit of money by non-tendering Adam Simber, who, like, earlier in his Blue Jays tenure, he was critical to the bullpen, but as they have transitioned more towards a swing and miss philosophy, Simber isn't that guy. He's not going to generate swing and miss. He never has. He never will. So, considering the fact that he earned $3.15 million this year and he'll be entering his final year of arbitration in 2024, I'd say there's a pretty safe bet of Adam Simber getting non-tendered. That money you can spend otherwise, like, elsewhere. You don't need to spend that kind of money on Adam Simber, who's, like, even if you wanted to keep him as depth, you can't send him down to the minors unless you receive his permission. So I don't know. I don't see him coming back whatsoever. But outside of him, like, everyone else should be, and I don't think the Blue Jays would have traded for Hicks if they weren't overly confident about their ability to extend him. Like, he's a 27-year-old pitcher, so maybe you're looking at something like a 3 or 4 year deal, something that he could still go out and after this next contract and go seek another big one too on top of it. Obviously there's a precedent for high leverage relievers when it comes to free agency. You look at Rafael Montero last year with the Houston Astros, and the Padres Padres reliever whose name is escaping me at the moment. I'm sure I'll remember it after I'm done recording, but he as well re-upped with the Padres on a lucrative deal. So there is some sort of baseline that the Blue Jays and Hicks can work on, but obviously the Blue Jays aren't a team that historically has spent big money on relievers. So if they were to extend Hicks to a similar type deal, it would sort of be unprecedented for the Blue Jays. But at the same time, he's somebody who they absolutely could use in the bullpen. And it would kind of be a waste of assets for him to only spend half a season with the Blue Jays. I mean, they didn't give up their top pitching prospects, but Semra Burse and Adam Klofenstein, they're two respectable arms that theoretically could have had an impact on the Blue Jays rotation next year. So to give up the two arms like that and to only have half a season for Hicks, that again would be another squandered opportunity. So I would think Hicks would be among the Blue Jays top priorities once the World Series ends and they can actually sign players to extensions. So him, Matt Chapman, maybe we'll see Brandon Belt. Kevin Kiermaier would be a great guy to bring back, but I think at least initially the Blue Jays have to explore higher options, especially when you consider that Cody Bellinger is a free agent and is somebody who would absolutely improve the Blue Jays offense as a whole, and especially from a slugging perspective. So I think they have to explore their options from, you know, in terms of the outfield position. And obviously, if Matt Chapman doesn't come back, they have to look at alternatives. Maybe somebody like Jaime Candelario at third base. But I still think we're going to see some sort of notable trade with the Blue Jays this winter, because given how thin the free agent market is, if you don't bring back Matt Chapman and as well as Kevin Kiermaier, your options are a little limited when it comes to replacements via free agency, right? If you're not going to make a run at Shohei Ohtani, who wouldn't address your outfield or third base, might I add, and if you're not going to be able to land Cody Bellinger, and if you want to look a little bit higher than Candelario, you're probably going to have to go into the trade market and seek a guy like a Tim Anderson or somebody else for third base and the outfield. So, but the problem with that is, unlike last winter, it's not like Toronto has just a surplus of catchers to deal from. Like, they don't have that luxury this winter, and they have further depleted their prospect system, and you don't want to do that too much, especially at the upper levels, because again, guys like Addison Barger or Elvis Martinez, those are two players, and Davis Schneider and Paul Giamatti as well, who's off to a really nice start in the Arizona Fall League. All those guys, like, they could have an impact on the Blue Jays roster next season. And sure, you have to balance between, okay, what is their potential impact versus an external option who could help us win more, give us a better chance to win now, rather than doing so over an extended number of seasons. But still, the Blue Jays have to find that sort of that balance, and it's not just from an asset perspective, but I think they also have to find some sort of balancing act between not sacrificing too much defense for offense and not sacrificing too much offense for defense. And I don't think they overcorrected last winter. Like, obviously the Blue Jays defense, particularly in the outfield, needed to get a lot better with Gurriel and Hernandez on the corners. Like, that was a disaster defensively. And anyone who watched the Seattle Mariners play this year, you kind of know what I'm saying, right? So I think, and it's easier said than done, obviously, especially in a year where the free agent market is so thin. But again, that's what the front office and Ross Atkins are facing this winter. Like, that's the obstacles. And not even to mention the fact that Danny Jansen will be entering his final year of arbitration. Bo, Vladdy, they only have two more years of team control, and then they'll be eligible for free agency. Like, these are the tough conversations and tough decisions that the Blue Jays are going to face over these next 2-3 months. And I don't envy them, but it also speaks to how important it was to not squander another potential deep run like they did this year. Like, it's just, it's so, like, sad's a very vague term, but it's just heart crushing to see one of the best pitching staffs this franchise has ever rostered go to waste. Like, Kevin Gausman, Jose Berríos, Chris Bassett, even Yusei Kikuchi, they're all going to be 1 year older next season. They're going to be 1 year closer to that eventual decline. Same thing with George Springer. And you look at the bullpen, and it's just like, there were so many guys that not only stayed healthy, but met or exceeded expectations. Yusei Kikuchi having the type of year that he did. No one would have expected that after the 2022 season that he had. Same thing with Berríos, right? Obviously, you couldn't predict what was going to happen with Alek Manoah, but still, everything just kind of aligned perfectly on the pitching side. And to lose so quickly and the way they did, where it's like the basis of your team was pitching and defense, particularly in the starting rotation. Like, your starting rotation was supposed to be better than Minnesota's, and you didn't even let your starters cook. I mean, sure, it would have been nice if Kevin Gausman gave you more length in game one, but man, pulling Berríos in the fourth inning is a decision the Blue Jays are going to regret all winter. Now, again, like I said, they didn't score any runs, so it's not going to keep them up too many. It's not going to have them enduring too many sleepless nights, but still, you never know what could have been had you let Berríos stay in the game and continue dominating his former team. So, yeah, it's going to be another interesting offseason for the Blue Jays. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait, you know, 3 weeks-ish until the real nuggets start to come out in terms of offseason rumblings. So I guess just enjoy the postseason. I mean, in terms of teams to root for now, like, I guess it's the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Blue Jays West, because you have Gurriel and hopefully Moreno's not too is okay after getting that backswing off the helmet and having to leave game two. I haven't seen any sort of updates about his status, but that may be a team that you look to. They'll be in tough against the Los Angeles Dodgers, but I wouldn't say there's too many rooting interests in the American League. I think most fans would be hate watching against the Rangers and the Orioles and obviously the Twins, and everyone seems to hate the Astros. So there's not many rooting interests in the AL, and frankly, the NL is far more appealing, at least to me personally, just with the teams left. I mean, you got the Phillies going up against the Braves, Alex Anthopoulos' team, right? The Dodgers and D-backs, like, that should be a good series. So at least my attention will be heavily centered on the National League, but you know, hopefully there's just a lot of chaos, and it'll help to ease some of that burden, or at least the pain that there's still for many Blue Jays fans. So, but that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you enjoy a safe and fun off season, and hopefully we'll be able to talk in the near future, but with no Blue Jays baseball, it may be a little bit of a break here until we pick things up again closer to the start of the offseason. So, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks.